The Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics. Every 2 years, every 4 years, it's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. In this podcast, early on, I introduced my listeners to demoralization. I introduced you to an artificial kind of demoralization, the kind brought about by psychological warfare, a massive amount of propaganda. Over the course of a generation, you can bring a society, well, actually not even a generation, of 15 to 20 years. That's how long it takes to put one society under new textbooks, under new media, basically. But over that course of time, you can bring a society to a state where true information means nothing to them. Where they can no longer really defend themselves, their family, their culture, their country, their race. And I brought this to your attention under the guise of basically brainwashing. That's what it is. It's a massive brainwashing technique. And it is basically psychological warfare. And it is unnatural in so much as it's induced on a society through the media, through the textbooks, through the newspapers, through the magazines. We've talked about that extensively. There's another type of demoralization, though, that is the classic kind. If you look up the definition, it's simply to cause someone to lose confidence or hope, dispirit. And that's the kind that's quite natural. It happens to all of us. Maybe you had a class that you were doing very well in college or even high school. And you had a great deal of confidence in your English class, let's say. And then you get a test back, and your test that you thought you had an A on, you end up getting a C. And you're like, how on earth did this happen? You know, you lost some confidence. And then, of course, at the lunch table, you're normally talking about English class because you get an A in it. Now, all of a sudden, you got a C on the test, and you don't really want to talk about it anymore. And this is something you observe human beings go through all the time. They lose confidence. It can happen over a loss of a job right now in the economy. The economies all over the world are bad, some better than others, but are bad. And in somewhere like America, people are losing jobs. And when you lose your job, of course, the first thing goes in your confidence. You lose a spring in your step. And it's interesting because at the first sign of an enemy facing problems, you should see some type of demoralization or some type of loss of confidence. usually our enemy when it comes to the anti-whites, the pink rabbits, the pro-white genocide crowd, they're pretty confident. They go on and they rattle their mouths. They say the most obscene things. They never retract them. They never redo them. They never complain or explain. They just keep pushing. Pro-white genocide. You know, white rabbit genocide. They're anti-white. And most of them are white. And a great many of them are Jewish. Or part Jewish. I call them all pink rabbits. So I don't really have a problem with defining someone like Mr. Weiss, Tim Weiss, W-I-S-E. I don't really have a problem defining him because I throw them all in one big lump. I figure God will work out the details someday. But they're all pink rabbits to me. They look like us and they have no loyalty to us. I assume he is part Jewish. I don't know, but he wrote an interesting piece. He wrote an interesting piece that was basically white rabbit genocide. But as I'm anti-genocide, he's pro-genocide. He's as anti-white as they come, and it basically he showed his pink rabbit colors because that's what he is, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what became interesting as the piece came out, and I'll have some links to it, some of the different blogs, one new blog, Mind Weaponization, carried all the different links to it, and Occidental Descent, all of on my webpage there's some different links, and they all have carried the Tim Weiss piece. It's basically a screed talking about how wonderful it is when old white people die. It's basically evil. But what was interesting about it is for once he came out and retracted the thing and started revising it, saying he was misunderstood. You know, he wasn't calling for genocide. Well, sure he was. He went on CNN and got thrown a bunch of softball questions. But the idea that he would go on CNN and talk about what he was really talking about, trying to explain himself deeper, is pretty much new. Our enemy typically doesn't do that. You know, if you have someone that's acing tests, and all of a sudden they don't want to talk about that class anymore, you can assume something's happened. If our enemies keep on writing these pieces, which are just being honest, then all of a sudden start retracting them, facing more and more pressure to retract them for a variety of different reasons, some that we see, some that we don't see. Tim Weiss doesn't operate in a vacuum. The Tim Weisses don't act alone. They answer to certain parties. It's interesting. I expect to see more of this, but that's the fascinating thing about it. You know, people that are confident don't keep revising what they write. People that are confident don't keep on explaining what they're saying. People that have a great deal of spring in their step don't worry about leaving anyone behind, or don't worry about what you understand and what you don't understand. They're just confidence is just that. It's confidence. When you see someone lose confidence, when you see someone having to explain things or having to retract things or having to go back over things, especially among a group where typically they don't operate like that. Yeah, he's arrogant, he knows everything, and he's pro-white genocide, and it's wonderful. And then all of a sudden he said, well, technically I'm not talking about old people dying and old white people dying, and technically I'm just talking about, political movements over the next 50 years. That wonderful 50 years comes up. Yeah, Tim Weiss is 2050. 2050 will never happen, Mr. Weiss, because you don't have your New World Order. Well, if you do, where's it at? Show us. You got a God here? Show us your God. And bring him out. But you got something here we need to know about, bring them out. Let's get it on. Let's show us something. But you'd see him talking about 2050. 2050 will never happen. The economy of your big alma mater, the Anglo-American banksters, is collapsed. Yeah, your alma mater is going down in flames. Their New World Order is going down in flames. Maybe they're just informed you of that. You got to keep quiet about this. Keep quiet about that. Don't be so arrogant, because it ain't over until the fat white rabbit sings. And well, she might not exactly sing for you. It may not be a pink rabbit singing. But anyways, they're losing some spring in their step, and this becomes across the board. And in the next, this one is going to be news and views, and I'm going to go over some news and views. And I've got about three podcasts that have been done, and this is one of them, and this is going to be the first one out. What we're entering is the fog of the endgame. And as we come into the fog of the endgame, a lot of the different geopolitical moves that we've been talking about will become a little more confusing. You're going to see things that don't make sense in the broader scheme of things. And the reason that happens is we're near trend changes. We're near trend changes. The Germans are now focused not on geopolitics anymore. They got that wrapped up. They're starting to focus on internal politics. The Russians are no longer focusing on their near and abroad because their near got near and their abroad got abroad. Yeah, they did what they were supposed to do, so now they're turning their attention internally, and I'm going to point out this to you. And it becomes interesting because this is where they should be coming out with stuff. Where should we be seeing things? So what's interesting about the fog of the endgame is we're going to see a lot of geopolitical moves that don't make any sense. Obama had his Jewish advisors all of a sudden leave the White House, and David Axelrod is even leaving. That doesn't really make any sense. So are the Jews angry at him? Have they set him up, or do they want nothing to do with a failure like him? It could be that. I could argue that. Or you could argue something else, that he screwed them over, that someone else is pulling his strings. So the rumors and the innuendos are going to be hot and heavy, and I'm going to go over this with you. But basically, we've been watching this geopolitical trend, and this geopolitical trend, this machine that Russia is at the spearhead and German soft power is behind it, is now turning its focus internally. And we could say that, and Russia, we could say that Russia's energy deal has been sealed long term by the balancing act between Nord Stream and South Stream, which supplies Europe with all the natural gas, and that was the Germans pushing that stuff through. That's their big European deal, and all their energy deals with Germany that Germany's tied them to. But what's been interesting, in late September, September 27th, I believe it was, Russia and China signed a series of energy agreements, so the largest energy agreements in the world. Because Russia is the largest energy producer in the world, it needs some large energy customers, some good customers. A lot of people think this is a big deal or bad for White Rabbits. Well, what it does is it gives the Germans internal pressure within Europe. Like, we better do what's good for Russia, or we better cut good deals for Russia because then they're going to sell more energy to China. When in reality, right now, Russia is the largest oil producer in the world, bar none, and they're the largest natural gas producer in the world, bar none, and they probably have a lot more than they're telling us. Because parties 10 years ago said Russia will never be the number one oil producer. Well, open mouth, insert foot. They're white. They know what they're doing. And they're running their long-term game. I've been a big fan of Russian geopolitics for a handful of different reasons I will go into, or I have went into. He's done some amazing things to our enemy, especially when it comes to the Anglo-American elite and the bankster class, the Pink Rabbit banksters. And this, the fur's starting to fly in a variety of different areas. Now the Republicans are back in the House. It should be interesting to see whether they will pass the START Treaty, before the Republicans come back in on January 1st. I don't know. We're entering the fog of the endgame. But what is known, that Russia and China cut the biggest energy deal anyone's ever seen. A lot of people think that's good for the Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters. If the Russians, if the Chinese, there's two sides in China, and they've been in the fog of the endgame for a long time. I don't know which end is up in China. I really don't. But one thing I do know is they cut a non-dollar denominated energy deal. In other words, China can't pay Russia for their energy, for any of their energy or natural resources in dollars. They have to pay in something else. They have to come to some other agreements. Now, if the Chinese would have said, you know what, we're going to pay for the Russian energy deal, and we're going to pay for it in all these dollars we have, which are basically worthless, or with these U.S. bonds or notes, you know, all these U.S. assets, well, that would have probably been good for the Pink Rabbit banksters and elitesters. But since the Chinese cut a non-dollar denominated deal, that should tell you something else. Yeah, they've been cut out of the equation. Now, Russia could probably handle a great many of U.S.'s energy needs, too. But, you know, it's a balancing act. And shortly thereafter, you have an interesting piece that comes out in the Telegraph. And you can actually look up the Russian China signs a series of energy agreements. BBC carries it. In fact, BBC carries it under that title, Russia and China sign a series of energy agreements. It's a big deal. It wasn't a big deal in the U.S. media. You won't see this stuff on Fox News. Most of the stuff I talk about, you're not going to see on Fox News. It's mainstream stuff. It's just not mainstream in America. Some of this stuff is kind of went underneath the scenes in America, especially of late, even more so than usual. But then you have the piece from the Telegraph, which comes out, I don't know, this is just in November, this is October 18th, this is a month after the energy deal. France and Germany seek to anchor Russia to the West, and this is the Telegraph out of the UK. France and Germany seek to anchor Russia to the West. So there's a big game coming as the fog of the endgame. And Russia, of course, You can sum up their whole big foreign policy that culminated with this big energy deal with China to balance their energy deals with Europe. It gives the Germans internal pressure. And heavens knows they got enough oil to sell to everyone and everyone on the planet that wants it, probably. Again, if someone's not supposed to be the number one oil producer and 10 years later yet ends up being the number one oil producer and the number one natural gas producer, well, obviously they've got more going on than they're telling anybody. But that's how that culminated. A lot of times, most of the internal, the Russian nationalists, who some of them believe Putin's a Russian nationalist, some of them believe he's a crony, a lot of them hate him for various different reasons for internal things in Russia. What you have to understand is that the way I look at it is Russia has real no borders. They have borders, and they'll protect their borders, but they're attached. They're not surrounded by oceans like North America. They don't have a Pacific and an Atlantic. They don't have just one landmass, Mexico, that they got to worry about. They have a lot of different things going on there, and the place was totally destroyed when Putin came into power. In fact, Russia was on its last legs. The neocons were going to use Chechnya to split it up. And so when you got the neocons and the pink rabbit banksters and the elites are sitting in Chechnya, when you have them sitting in Estonia, when you have them sitting in the Ukraine, when you have them drawing up plans to split up Russia, when you have them looting your energy assets, worrying about Russian nationalism, what's going on in the streets of Moscow, what's going on in the suburbs, or what's happening to white rabbits on the street, as tragic as this might seem, is kind of useless. Because if you don't do something about those pink rabbits sitting out there in Chechnya trying to split up Russia, if you don't do something about what's going on in the Ukraine, if you don't do something about what's going on in the Caucasus, if you don't come to some conclusions about what's going on in Georgia, unless you go on the offense and get them out of there, you might as well sign it up. It doesn't matter what's going on in Moscow, because that's going to end up dominating the discussion. That's going to end up splitting up the country. That's going to end up, you can't let an enemy sit there. So he went on a blistering offense. That blistering offense, energy-wise, culminated in Nord Stream, South Stream, and the big Chinese deal, which is non-dollar denominated. He also went on a geopolitical tear. Most of which we don't even fully know the results of. I went over this with you, but it is nothing internal to Russia, but yet it is. Because if you don't control the Caucasus, your enemy will. He doesn't have a choice to just split that off and throw him out of there. What was interesting about the war with Georgia is he deported a couple million Georgians in the blink of an eye. So that's interesting. But I'll give the guy a little bit of room simply because he doesn't have much room to sit there and worry about what's going on in the streets of Moscow other than total control. The only thing they were worried about was not letting the Anglo-American elites prop up neo-Nazism. They were trying to prop up some kind of national socialist group that they were controlling within Russia. Why were they trying to prop it up? To create a problem, to get a reaction, to get a solution. And that's according to James Edwards and the Council of Foreign Relations and Brzezinski, who of course was Obama's foreign policy advisors. That's what they were doing. You can look it up. It was a big mystery in Russia. Why are the Anglo elites trying to prop up? Why are these Americans trying to prop up Nazism? And they've talked about that, but they were creating problems to get a reaction, to get a solution. They were doing everything possible to destroy Russia. So he came back from the dead, and he did it with brilliant foreign policy moves. He did it by creating win-win situations. But that's not necessarily good for anyone on the street of Russia. If you're Putin's buddy, the Siloviki, the Igor Seconds, well, you're probably doing quite well. If you're an average guy on the street, you're probably ticked off at some things going on. So as he turns his policies internal, exactly how the machinations are going on, what's going to be done with Khodorkovsky, what kind of games are going to play, you're into the fog of the end game. But one thing I do expect to see them letting the Russians march. I was asked directly, is he turning his focus internally? I mean, now you've got the largest Russian nationalist marches anyone's ever seen, 20,000, and most of these guys don't like Putin. So I don't know how he's going to go from a foreign policy move like he just did in August by signing the big Denmark agreement. He had a big agreement with Denmark he signed. This is another European agreement where they're going to do naval maneuvers and stuff like that in the Danish Straits, I think they're called. But he's got all this stuff going on geopolitically, which he's done very, very well. But now he's got to turn that, turn this success internal. And how you go from that, from one to the other with a lot of Russian nationalists unhappy, I don't know, because most of them don't see it like I see it. I give the guy room to breathe. I give him room to breathe because I understand his enemy and I understand what he's got to do. If he doesn't handle what's going on in Chechnya, if he doesn't handle what's going on in Ukraine, doesn't handle what's going on in Estonia and all these places around him, if he doesn't handle, his enemy will, and his enemy will use that as leverage to take down Russia and split up Russia internally and cause civil wars and everything else like they did. They were trying to do with Chechnya, terrorist attacks, what have you. So I give them some room to breathe, but as they turn internally, I don't know what to expect. You had 20,000 young Russians march, and a lot of them were very unhappy with the Kremlin. They believe foreign control's there, and they may be right on some level. There's all kinds of games going on. But as he turns his attention internal, it's going to be interesting to see what they do, what kind of games are played, what kind of surprises are in store, and there will be surprises. But a Russian nationalist can do, if you see the world as I see it, or see the world as I see it through this podcast, what was going on in Russia, a Russian nationalist can do very little until you get rid of what's going on in the periphery. Until you can stop your enemy and control your territory, you can do very little. Now, why does he shut down the borders? Why didn't he throw everyone non-European out? I don't know what they have planned. This is all the fog of the end game. And the end game is going to involve a big war. And I don't know what all is going with there. Really don't. I just know big war, but that's kind of ambiguous. It won't be once the fog lifts and the fur starts flying. And then we'll see. You might see various different statements. What we've seen in, this is another foggy situation. Japan and Russia exchange words over the curls. I expect this type of nonsense to happen. This is the fog of the endgame, whatever they have planned. But I do expect to see it to become what you see is what you get as they turn their attention inwardly. I got numerous emails about Merkel. Angela Merkel says German multicultural society has failed. Utterly failed is the words. Now, those are strong words, and those words obviously excite a lot of white rabbits, moving right along. But then she turns around and says, they need to be integrated and stuff like that. Well, she knows damn well they're not going to integrate them. Why are they playing these games? I don't know. She actually doesn't have to. But it requires a great deal of courage to state it for what it is, and that's genocide. It doesn't require any courage right now in Europe to talk about multicultural has failed or that Muslims aren't integrating. It doesn't require too much courage to do that. Now, 5 years ago, she would have said this. That would require a little bit of courage. 4 years ago. But courage right now is talking about white rabbit genocide. It's saying for what it is. Trying to integrate a bunch of Turks in Germany is genocidal. I mean, no one's flooding Turkey with non-Turks and saying, you know what, multiculturalism has failed here, but we're going to try to force integrate them. Yeah, we're going to blend ourselves out of existence with them and this type of thing. You got to keep pointing out the double standard. One of the frustration things for us is that you have a consistent message that is starting to ricochet all through the United Kingdom, all through America, all through Australia, because we're centered in Anglosphere here. We're in the heart of darkness. And my podcast rolling in the English language. Bob only talks in the English language. Publishing something in German or putting out a podcast in German can be kind of weird. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen when you start putting things in European languages. They got all kinds of weird laws that you can come under. But we keep it in English. And the Soviet Union cannot be brought down by bringing down communists in Korea. It cannot be brought down by bringing in communists in Vietnam. Those are a byproduct of communism in the Soviet Union. Soviet Union sponsoring that. Eventually, to bring down any communism, you got to confront it in the Soviet Union. You do so with a consistent message, or at least that's how it was done. And so we're in the heart of darkness. We're in the heart of this big, closed society, whether it be multiculturalism, multiracialism. All these different social engineering schools are basically sponsored by Anglo banking elite. It's simply a fact. Jew-Gentile-like. Jews are always at the forefront of it. Yeah, you can't talk about something like feminism without talking about the Jew rabbits. They own the show. When it comes to what you see is what you get stuff. Rockefeller and Rothschilds funded feminism, and that's their side. That's Team Pink Rabbit. That's Pink Rabbit Bankster. So it is what it is. But basically, to confront it, you have to basically confront it in America. But once it is confronted in America, you can start doing some things. You can take big pot shots at it in Germany, because Germany didn't really import this stuff. It was imported there from the Anglo uh, they're basically Anglo-American or rather United Kingdom out of the Tavistocks, and all this social engineering stuff was basically Anglo in origin. Shame to say it. A lot of it out of America. You know, some European Jews definitely were at the top of Frankfurt School, to say the least. But it might have come from Europe, but it roosted in New York. So basically you have all this stuff coming into Europe, and is a byproduct of stuff being in America, the American media, so on and so forth. In the United Kingdom and Australia, they're kind of on the periphery, getting run over by America. And their own elites, of course, their own elites are all tied to the hips of the Americans as well on some level. So you have all this nonsense, which is basically what I call a closed society, in regards to scientific racism that took off in the Anglosphere, and it flooded in, it started seeping into Russia. There's nothing really you can do about it in Russia. Until you do something about it in America. Because it doesn't matter how much you stomp it out, it's going to come back. But once you're doing something about it in America, once a consistent message there, once you can see it gelling, once you can see it working, you can really take some shots. So I'm interested to see what they do. I don't have my hopes up on them doing too much simply because of the fog of the endgame. I think they're pussyfooting around, basically. But she could take some big shots if she wanted to. There are other German elements that may. They may come out of nowhere and take big shots. You may hear, you might even hear a consistent message that we have, that White Rabbit Radio has put out, that Whitaker Online, the mantra. You might actually hear that from a high-ranking European official or a Russian official, maybe even before you hear it from an American. Because they're really fed up with this stuff, just like the average American, the average Brit, the average Aussie. They're fed up with this stuff too, but they have permission to speak now. Once you're confronting the Soviet Union in the Soviet Union, you have permission to speak in Vietnam because it's coming down. You know, you have permission to speak on the periphery. It certainly doesn't hurt because Angela Merkel got away with saying that. You didn't hear any whining or crying from the Jews. But of course she backed it up by saying they should be integrated. I wonder what would happen if they would come out with a mantra, or if they would, one of the Germans or one of the Russians would just say this is genocide. It's been mentioned in somewhere in Northern Europe, one of the politicians had mentioned this is genocidal or something like that, but it's starting to seep in, but that's where it gets frustrating, because it could move along very, very quickly if someone showed a little courage. If someone just showed a little courage, because they definitely know this is out there. They definitely know about WhitakerOnline.org. It gets lots of Russian readers. It gets lots of German readers. My podcast is, you know, it gets downloaded by all kinds of different parties for different reasons. You know, I think the enemy knows much more about this podcast than the average Roy Rabbit. But that's how this stuff tends to work. It works on the periphery of a society like Samizdat, and it works in an underground culture, and by the time it goes mainstream, it's over with. But anyways, that's where we're at. We're at the fog of the endgame. And we got all kinds of different cross currents going. We have the Germans and the Russia turning things internally. They've wrapped up their foreign policy, or it appears to have it wrapped up prior to the endgame. We have, and I'll talk about that. We have some different things in America that have just happened that aren't necessarily good for Russia-German relations. Russia-U.S. relations or Germany-U.S. relations. Because the Germans are concerned about our U.S. stimulus moves. Well, they're printing lots of money, and they're destroying the country and destroying themselves in the process. And that comes from CNBC, Germany concerned about U.S. stimulus moves. And this is recent, November 4th. But you're going to see this type of talk, and I don't know. It's going to become more and more confusing, I have a feeling. Until you get into the actual, the fog starts lifting with World War III, which can happen any day. Sooner rather than later, they're pushing for these agreements to be meeting with Iran, but Iran doesn't seem to be, they're not moving. They're not moving. There's going to be a war. It's not if, but when. But we're going to talk about this some more, and I'm going to go over some news events that are relevant. But we're starting to see our enemy stumble. We're starting to move the dialogue into our direction. What I need from you now is to keep doing what you're doing. Think of another person in the area that would like hearing something like this podcast, or would like hearing something like even maybe a conservative that might want to read old Bob Whitaker stuff and understand how a consistent message works, who wants to learn something about practical politics. It only takes, there's an old U.S. military saying, as an army of one, it became a big ad campaign, but that's really all it takes. But we already have that one in every area. If you could just double up or triple up, it certainly applies the pressure. It allows the whole team to move in various different ways. Until you have a consistent message confronting the Soviet Union, you can put out brush fire upon brush fire, communist brush fire upon communist brush fire. But until someone brings down that Soviet Union, those brush fires will keep coming back. And so that's what we're doing here. We're trying to bring down the modern day scientific racist closed society. This modern day monolith. This nightmare of a system that uses multiculturalism, multiracialism, and its objective is white rabbit genocide, or genocide through assimilation, which is what Merkel's basically calling for. And they're running a sliding scale. It's much easier to talk about multiculturalism and Islam is not working out in Europe right now than to call it for what it is, attempted genocide. It takes a little more courage to say that. But you never know. Someone can pop up. But I'm interested to see how Russia turns its attention internally and what they do, what they have planned, what goes on with Khodorkovsky, what exactly happens with him, what they use him for. Are they going to let him out of jail? Are we going to get big surprises? Anything goes right now because we're in the fog of the endgame. Anything goes. And we're going to keep coming back to these things. I'm going to talk about some news events. But we're basically going into war. They're going to do one last big meeting with Iran, supposedly. Some say maybe not. The Jews aren't so confident. They're giving their Jonah speeches, which is rather interesting. I'm going to go into that. There's some kind of big event, and if you're a Jew rabbit listening to me, that your leaders are giving speeches that you might not want to hear. But Germany has basically wrapped up its near and abroad, which means Russia has wrapped up its near and abroad, which means Germans are wrapping things up, which means we're getting ready to go into the end game, going into World War III, and the fog of war has descended. All kinds of cross currents, all kinds of confusion. And I'll be back with you in a minute. We're going to talk about some funny things. I'm going to talk about a famous Russian that I've never talked about. He's quite an interesting character. Then I'm going to go over some news events. I could do news events day on, day in, day out, but it's basically the same type of trends toward war. I'll point out some new things for you, though. And then I'm going to tell you a funny story. I'll be back with you in a minute, and we're going to take a short break. Here, a word from our sponsor, we'll call it. And now a word from our sponsors. Horace, what can I buy to become the life of the party besides the Undercover Lover t-shirt? That is a question we always get asked. Well, you can always get yourself an Undercover Lover or a Green Goddess or a White Rabbit Radio beer stein. Yes, they've been reported to magically fill up on their own. Yeah, parties are just reported to overflow with beer. It's amazing. Amazing product, all for the very low cost of $23.99. Yes. And if you have problems getting up in the morning, you can always get yourself a White Rabbit Radio, Green Goddess, or Undercover Lover coffee mug. It'll help you wake up faster. Yeah, this stuff is reported to work very, very well. And those are all for the low price of $15. And all the proceeds go to support our servers. So if you're having problems becoming the life of the party, get yourself a beer stein. You're having problems getting up in the morning? Well, put yours truly in front of you. In front of you as you drink your morning coffee. And now back to our regular programming. There is a famous Russian that I haven't talked about, and I'm going to talk about this. This is probably one of the more interesting white rabbits on the world scene today. And there's been movies and books written about him, and there's a lot of mystery to him, a lot of mystery surrounding him. But the Thailand authorities just extradited him. He's the most famous arms dealer in the world, and he's considered a Russian. His name's Viktor Bout, an accused Russian arms trafficker. And the United States, of course, people have been after him for years and years and years. If you've ever seen the movie Lord of War. Lord of War was about him, basically, the fictional account about him. He became quite notorious in the wars like the Second Congo War against arming up all sides. He'd have 60 of these big Antonov 8s, and he'd be flying these Antonov 8s in, like in the Lord of War, basically just selling loads and loads of weapons to all sides as they just annihilated each other. And numerous different cases against him, but they're trying to make a case against him, having to do with FARC, saying that he was arrested in a sting operation at a Bangkok hotel after he agreed, according to authorities, to sell millions of dollars in weapons to undercover American agents posing as rebels from the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC. And that's what America is charging him with. They're trying to charge him with. They just got him extradited. Russia wanted him extradited to Russia. They don't want him to stand trial in America because apparently he knows a lot about Russian intelligence or something like that. But it's a big brouhaha between Russia and the U.S. In my opinion, the setup or whatever they got him for or whatever's going on with him, well, they're charging him with illegal purchase of aircraft, wire fraud, and money laundering. They've tried to bust this guy for years. He's one of the guys that... You know, he would have just plane loads of stuff. He owns a company called AirCess, which is an interesting company. Look it up. I'll put it on my Twitter, AirCess.com. He has his own personal website. He's quite notorious, quite famous. No one knows a lot about him. No one knows officially where he's born. He's like a big mystery character. But one thing you do know, if you need weapons, you're in the middle of hell, he'll show up and sell you weapons and probably your enemy, too. But I don't know if you could be a weapons dealer and have any scruples. I don't know how that works. But AirCess is this famous aviation company, and he has, you can look at his logo. It's a pretty funny logo. See if you see anything interesting about his logo, his AirCess logo at the top. But Victor Bout has been arrested, and what's funny is if you look him up on Google, VICTORBOUT, you look at the Google images or Yahoo images, you're going to see pictures of him. He's always in jail. He's always in jail. You'll see different police around him, different countries. But he's always being arrested somewhere and then let go. It's kind of an interesting character. But in the Second Congo War, he became quite famous. He's never been arrested for anything he became famous for in Africa. In some countries in Africa, they say that more Africans have been killed by his weapons than AIDS. You know, or his weapons have killed more Africans than AIDS. It's probably true, Second Congo War, because he had 60 planes going full time. What's funny is the times that they've tried to arrest him and stuff like that for doing things, they've never really busted him. He's extremely clever. You know, they'd bring down his aircraft, and his aircraft would have a bunch of, African officials in it instead of guns. Or one of the famous incidents, he had a bunch of frozen chicken in it. you know, they think there's AK-47s, there's frozen chickens. He's quite a character, though. But I don't know. I guess he's going to go on trial in America, but the Russians are pitching a fit over this because America apparently violated a lot of laws in arresting him like they did in Thailand. And he is, the Israelis have some pretty big arms dealers, too, that weapon up a lot of different places, but no one as famous as Victor Bout. He's the most infamous. The reason, in my opinion... The reason they are so much after him now all of a sudden is it just over Farkers or something else? In my opinion, it's something else. Now, the Europeans have always wanted him because of Africa and all the and all the crazy stuff he's done, which, you know, technically they say nothing. They've never busted him for anything in Africa because, you know, he's always flouting the laws. You know, there's a war going on. I'm selling weapons to all sides. You know, Charles Taylor in Liberia. Some of these characters he sold weapons to are just brutal murderers, basically. But it's war, you know. You try to make sense of any war, you can't. But in the Second Congo War, he became famous. Charles Taylor, he had some famous customers like Charles Taylor. Another African despot. But where he really pissed off, in my opinion, pardon the French, covered little white rabbit's ears, where he really pissed off some certain elements in America and the UK, as well as Australia, especially the little Jew rabbits, the neocons, is prior to the run-up to the Lebanese War in 2006, prior to the run-up in the Lebanese War with Hezbollah. Hezbollah had all these high-tech Russian anti-tank weapons, anti-tank little missiles, little shoulder-mounted deals. You mount it on a little Hezbollah shoulder, little Hezbollah rabbit mounts that little tank killer, and they were dealing death against Israelis. Yeah, most parties don't like to admit that. They never gave true numbers, but Hezbollah, it was a horrific scene for the Israeli tank commanders and whatnot. But they got a hold of, Hezbollah got a hold of those, very sophisticated modern Russian anti-tank weapons. They're sophisticated and they're also simple, easy to operate, as simple as mounting them on a shoulder and aiming. And Hezbollah really doesn't care if they die, so if they got a little too close to a tank or something like that, that wouldn't matter. But these things will reach out and touch someone. They are serious, serious package against any tank. And how Hezbollah got a hold of those sophisticated Russian tank killing missiles, those little shoulder-mounted deals, how they got a hold of them right before the second Lebanon War, or the 2006 Lebanon War, became somewhat of a mystery for anyone not in the know. But Victor Bout was there meeting with them, and most likely sold them to him. Most likely got them in there, shipped them in, because he can ship weapons anywhere, anytime. He's like Magic Man for bullets and weapons and whatever else you need. It probably didn't come from Russia directly. No way, that'd be too dicey. Probably from the Ukraine or from Bulgaria. You can only use your imagination. Someone hands them to someone, the next thing you know, they're on Victor Bout's, one of Victor Bout's Antonov 8s, one of these big Russian cargo planes, and he's shipping them into Hezbollah or Syria, and they bring them across the border. You know, the shoulder-mounted missiles, those aren't very big. That stuff isn't big. It's one little kit. So that's what they were really ticked off about, because that did hurt the Israelis big time. Big time. Hezbollah's offense against their tanks couldn't move without getting hit, and they lost a lot of soldiers, and a lot of blood was shed over that. I have a simple solution for getting upset over tanks getting taken out. Don't go to war. If you go to war and someone takes out your tanks, well, you went to war. But, you know, if we're all equal, we should all have equal access to good Aryan weaponry, I guess. You could look at it that way. So I don't know what they're getting upset over, but they hold grudges, and they hold long-term grudges. If you know anything about the neocon rabbits, the pink rabbits, the little Jew rabbits, and they never forget, never forgive. But I think that's what this is over myself. And who knows who he sold what to. Yeah, when it comes to moving Russian arms around the planet, no one's as good at it as Victor Bout. The things he did in Africa are a legend. Things he did in Africa, but he's coming to America. Coming to America to stand trial for FARC. Would he arm FARC? He'd arm anyone. He'd arm anyone. He'd arm all sides. Who knows? I don't know. But I do know they were after him. They've been after him. Well, certain parties have been after him for a long, long time. Long, long time. But the fact that they just busted him now is most interesting. The fact that it's causing problems with our relationship with Russia is interesting as well. Do I think the Republican takeover is going to affect the START treaty? I don't know that this will even matter. You're into the fog of the end game. I don't know that any of this will matter, the Republican election, because some of the Republicans, I don't know, they're owned outright by the neocons, but then again, so are the Democrats in a lot of ways, so I don't know whether to make heads or tails over this, but the neocons will try to stir it up with Russia. That there's very little they can do except stuff like this, and stuff like this looks bad if they violated international law. But that's a little thing on Victor Bout. Now we're going to do some news around the world with Horace, and I'm going to go over some news events, anything new, because there's nothing really... there is a little things new. You got the Jew rabbits giving the famous story. You know, we're damned if we do, we damned if we don't. One of those famous biblical stories where their God's going to punish them no matter what they do. That type of story. But Victor Bout's an interesting character. If you've ever seen the movie Lord of War or read the different books about him, there's one famous book, the title escapes me, let me look it up here for you. It's Merchant of Death, Money, Guns, Planes, and the Man Who Makes War Possible. He is the original Merchant of Death. And most of the, no one even knows everything about him. No one even knows where he's really, really born. Is he born in Ukraine or born in Tajikistan? No one knows anything about this guy. He's a big mystery character. But one thing I do know is that he can get you weapons. lickety split. People are always worried about getting weapons in America. That's a big deal. You know, we got all these gun rights, gun privileges, and whatnot. And there's a serious number of weapons in America, even if you were just to count the shotguns and the 30-06s, to give any army a fit. Because eventually, to take over a country, you got to put boots on the ground, and that ain't easy. You know, what America, what we've seen in Lebanon even, is that you can bomb the living bejesus out of someone, but you got to eventually put boots on the ground and take the place over. What we've seen in Iraq is the same thing. You can bomb them to death, but eventually you got to put boots on the ground. That's where the trouble comes in. And America is something with the type of, and I'm just talking about shotguns and 30-06. You can, and the creativeness, the cleverness of White Rabbits, it's just a nightmare. If you look at the, Northern Ireland has these, maybe you've heard of them, the IRA. And it's an island. Ireland's an island. But the IRA was always able to get weapons onto this island. Always had a cache of weapons. Always had a cache of explosives. One could only imagine how difficult it is, to keep weapons out of somewhere like America or anywhere, really, as far as that goes. But if they can't keep them off an island, if you can't keep your soldiers from being attacked on an island, if somewhere like Northern Ireland is difficult to put boots on the ground, you basically just have to kill them all. If you want to take the place, you just got to kill them all. That's what they would have to do to the Irish there, or vice versa, the Scotch-Irish even. If the Irish went at it with them, it would be the same thing, but in reverse. And that's kind of a tragic situation, but that's one of the simple facts of war. Eventually, you got to put boots on the ground. In America, somewhere like America, it's a nightmare. But there's also another nightmare, because someone like him would be flying weapons night and day. And you can get anything you want. Yeah, there's all different types of parties that would probably love to fund an insurgency within America. Of course, that's another podcast. But he is one such party. That the Russians or someone else, who knows, he could buy weapons from several different parties, would turn loose. Maybe even elements within the American government would turn someone loose and have him weaponing up. But America's got enough weapons. Yes, we got plenty of weapons. We probably got more weapons than the average large third world army. In fact, we probably have more ammunition. The average American, I'm talking about the red states, have more ammunition than probably any 10 third world militaries. It's kind of funny and entertaining at the same time. But that is all you need to know about Victor Bout. He's the Lord of War. And this is something to watch, how this case goes forward. It's not being talked about a whole lot. I'll put up the piece from the New York Times, but most Americans have never heard of him. Most people, the planet, I'm guessing most people are pretty ignorant about him too, but he's the Lord of War. He's a merchant of death. He's, if you're in a war and you need some weapons or some ammunition, you want him on your cell phone number. You want his cell phone number, because he will hook you up. For a cost, of course. And probably hook up your enemy at the same time. That's the problem. But then again, who knows? Who knows? He didn't sell weapons to the Israelis, not that they needed it. But apparently he did hook up Hezbollah, and they've been out for blood after that. Because that does hurt. If someone gets modern tank, anti-tank weapons, in front of a war like that, and you end up in a bloodbath, obviously that hurt the Israelis big time. If you can't put your tanks in there, you got problems. I'm always surprised that someone like him hasn't sold stuff to Hamas, and he may have. In front of the end game, in front of World War III. These guys have been loose for a long, long time, and they've been planning for this war for a long, long time. Why do people at the Pentagon and people in the KGB or the SVR, why do they have guys like Victor Bout around? Why are they letting them run loose? Well, you gotta have someone. I guess they gotta have someone who operates outside the law every once in a while. That's what the Lord of War is all about. In the end, the Lord of War, they let the guy go. They let Nicolas Cage go. It's a great movie. See the movie. Lord of War. They let him go in the end. Why? Because someone needed him. It's interesting stuff. And tragic at the same time. Tragic, tragic, tragic. All these weapons. Yeah, there are some African countries that have never been the same after they met him and he sold their dictators weapons. That's for damn sure. But that's where he's famous, but he got busted over some deal with FARC. He's not stupid, so I don't know what's really going on there. If he was stupid, he would have been busted long ago. Because he definitely fudged some laws when it comes to selling weapons. But I have a feeling it's over this Hezbollah stuff. I have a feeling. Me thinks. But that's just my two cents on Victor Bouts. And he has his own personal website. Yes, he does. But anyways, let's move right on along to news and views. On the news front, there hasn't really been any that much news since the last piece of news and views I've given, but there is some news. I mean, there's always news being made, but the war drums are beating hard and fast. And I'll go over a bunch of different headlines here. I'm not going to go too elaborate on anything other than the new stuff. But there is one new piece, and it's pretty interesting. It was in the Atlantic. And this is written by Jeffrey Goldberg. And it says, Michael Oren's warning to American Jews. And now I'm going to read this to you because this is one of the most interesting pieces. It came out September 21st, 2010. There's been some controversy here in Washington about a short sermon Michael Oren's, Israel's ambassador to the United States, delivered at my synagogue, Addis Israel. I guess Addis Israel, that's the name of the synagogue, and two other synagogues over the course of Yom Kippur. I took the sermon as a warning from Netanyahu government. There may be tough times ahead in the peace process and with Iran, so it's time for American Jews to cowboy up and deal with the difficulties our brethren in Israel are facing. Others in my congregation took the speech as a signal that Israel was prepping American Jewry for an inevitable attack on Iran, or at the very least, for an Israeli unwillingness to freeze settlement growth, which could lead to the end of the current round of peace talks. In typical gold blog fashion, I think the speech might have meant all of these things. In any case, here is Oren's presentation in its entirety. Judge for yourself. And it's a speech, basically, about Jonah. Book of Jonah. On Yom Kippur, we read the book of Jonah, one of the Bible's most enigmatic texts. It is also one of the Bible's shortest texts, weighing in at a page and a half, and is quite an accomplishment for this holiday. And it features one of our scripture's most least distinguished individuals, Jonah, a man whose name in Hebrew means dove. Not dove as in Hebrew for bear, but dove as in English, a pigeon. Yet this same everyman, this Jonah, is tasked by God with the most daunting mission. He is charged with going to the great city of Nineveh and pursuing his pernicious people, persuading his pernicious people to repent for their sins or else. Not such an unusual task, you might think. 21st century life is rife with people who warn of catastrophes awaiting us if we fail to modify our behavior one way or another. Today we call them pundits, commentators, who, if proven correct, claim all the credit, but who, if proven wrong, bear none of the responsibility. Jonah, though, cannot escape the responsibility, nor can he dodge his divinely ordained dilemma. If he succeeds in convincing the Ninevans to atone and no harm befalls him, many will soon question whether that penance was really ever necessary. Jonah will be labeled an alarmist. But what if the people of Nineveh ignore the warning and the city meets the same fiery fate as Sodom and Gomorrah? Then Jonah as a prophet has failed. Such is the paradox of prophecy for Jonah, a lose-lose situation. No wonder he runs away. He flees to the sea, only to be swallowed by a gigantic fish, and then to the desert, cowering under a gourd. But in the end, the fish coughs him up on the gourd withers, and the gourd withers. The moral is, there is no avoiding Jonah's paradox. Once elected by God, whatever the risk, he must act. As such, the book of Jonah can be read as more than morality play, but as a cautionary tale about the hazards of decision-making. It is a political primer, if you will, what the medieval thinkers call the mirror for the princes. The Talmud teaches us in the post-biblical era the gift of prophecy is reserved for children and fools. In modern times, we don't have prophets. Pundits, yes, but no prophets. Instead, we have statesmen who, like Jonah, often have to make fateful decisions for which they will bear personal responsibility. If not a paradox of prophecy, these leaders face what we might call the quandary of statecraft. And he goes on to talk about all the tough decisions they got to make. This is must reading. Anyone looking at the Jew rabbits in America or what's going on in Israel, this is interesting reading. There is no escaping the responsibility, as Jonah learned thousands ago, and that responsibility is borne by our leaders and by the majority of the people that they represent. Israel today faces decisions every bit as daunting as those confronting Jonah. But we will not run away. There's no gourd to hide under, nor fish to swallow us whole. Terror of the peace process, Iran, our Ninevehs await. Pretty interesting. It scared a lot of people because it made it seem very real that they were going to do something about Iran. And they will. When? I don't know. Some say very, very soon. As soon as in the next, 3, 4, 6 months. There's all this stuff about it being next spring or this winter or who knows, next week. I don't predict that other than probably before 2012, most certainly. Let's go over some news events, and I'm going to run through some. One of the more interesting pieces is in the strategy page. This is on strategypage.com, and it's Israel braces for Iranian rain of fire. And the head of Israeli military intelligence warned his political superiors that the next major war Israel encountered would likely result in much higher Israeli casualties. There's also growing concern about Russia selling advanced anti-aircraft systems to Syria, which could pass them on to Iran. Same old, same old. But he talks about the actual numbers. Iran armed Syria, Hezbollah, the Shia militia in southern Lebanon, and Hamas, the Palestinian terrorist group that runs Gaza with at least over 50,000 rockets plus numerous other weapons. Most of the rockets are short range, 10 kilometers, but several thousand have much longer reach and hit targets within Israel. We went over all these rockets they have. They've been preparing for this at a minimum of, they admitted to preparing for it for like a decade, but longer than that probably. The basic defense plan assumes a future war with Syria that gives the local officials an idea of what to expect. Currently, the Israelis estimate that there could be as many as 3,300 Israeli casualties. And it goes over the casualties or how crazy it is. Israeli now assumes that Iran could also fire some of its ballistic missiles as well, armed with conventional warheads, but the bigger danger is Syria, which is a client state of Iran. Syria has an underground storage and launch facilities for its arsenal of over 1,000 Scud missiles. Armed with half-ton high-explosive and cluster bomb warheads, the missiles have ranges of 500 to 700 kilometers. Syria also has some 90 older Russian Frog 7 missiles, 70 kilometers, half-ton warheads, and 210 more modern Russian SS-21s, 120-kilometer range, half-ton warhead, operating with mobile launchers. There are also 60 mobile Scud launchers. The Syrians have a large network of camouflage launching sites for mobile launchers. Iran and North Korea have helped Syria build underground Scud manufacturing and maintenance sites. Scud missiles didn't go over that well in the first Gulf War, but if you have them in underground storage and launch facilities, they're going to be pretty hard to get to, and they'll be able to get some of them off. But they're preparing for all this stuff. Pretty interesting. I'll post this up on the Twitter. Let's see. Amos Yanlin tells the Knesset that Syria is preserving its relationship with Iran, Hezbollah, Tehran, Russia giving Syria advanced weapons. He talks about some of the stuff Russians sold Syria. I'll post this. This is interesting. It's basically war, war, war. Let's see. Hawkish Israeli minister drafts nuclear Iran plan. And they're talking about what's going to go on if these next meetings fail, which are supposed to be any week, but Iran's saying they're not going now or they're changing it. They want to have it in Turkey and not this place but that place. And it's all the fog of the end game. They've already decided on a date. Yeah, it's already inevitable. I just don't know when that date is. Let's see here. We had a wild scenario off the coast of California that led all the little alternative news and researchers went crazy over it. And that is there was a missile fired off the California coast. And the big deal with it is that it was the same day that back in 2007, a Chinese submarine surprised American military chiefs when it popped up close to the massive USS Kitty Hawk. Now, I can't imagine China showing up off the coast of California and firing a missile back somewhere else. That would at least make it out. But I don't know what it was that fired off California's coast. This is all the fog of the end game. They could have been warming up. The Green Goddess could have been warming something up. Maybe China did sneak in to send a message. It would be one hell of a message, I guess. But it was on the same date that back in 2007, Chinese submarine surprised American military chiefs when it popped up close to the massive USS Kitty Hawk. How were they able to do it? They were able to do it with modern submarine technology that they, of course, bought from the Russians. Let's see. Chinese submarine was not the first on the U.S. coast. The firing of a submarine-launched ballistic missile by a Chinese Jin-class submarine off the coast of Southern California last Monday at the height of the evening rush hour was not the first time U.S. Navy's anti-submarine warfare sensors have failed. They talk about 1981. These guys assume it was true. I don't know. Was this opinion maker? I don't know that was actually... I don't know that was actually China, but a lot of these alternative news and researchers assume it was sending some type of message. China flexed its military muscle Monday evening in the skies of West Los Angeles when a Chinese Navy Jin-class ballistic missile submarine deployed secretly from its underground home base in south coast of Hanan Island launched an intercontinental ballistic missile from international waters off of Southern California coast. WMR's intelligence sources in Asia, including Japan, say that the belief by the military commands in Asia and the intelligence services that the Chinese decided to demonstrate to the United States' capabilities on the eve of the G20 summit in Seattle. where President Obama is scheduled to attend during his 10-day trip to Asia. However, the report placed on CNN users-generated iReport site is yet to be vetted or confirmed. Yeah, there's no confirmation of this. I don't know what it was. But just because it was on the same date that the Chinese did something before, doesn't necessarily mean anything. It doesn't mean it isn't either. I don't know. Anything goes as the fog of the endgame sets in. Won't know anything until the first shots are fired. We won't know anything politically until someone at the top hits something very, very obvious. Let's see this. Major Rabbi says all we non-Jews are donkeys created to serve Jews. Yeah, I thought we was all the same. Yeah, little Jew rabbits always tell us we's all the same. This is on David Duke's site. This is interesting. Interesting speech by one of Israel's major rabbis. A major Jewish religious figure in Israel has likened non-Jews to donkeys and beasts of burden, saying the main reason for their very existence is to serve Jews. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, spiritual mentor of the religious fundamentalist party Shas, while represents Middle Eastern Jews, reportedly said that during Sabbath homily earlier this week that the sole purpose of non-Jews is to serve Jews. I thought we was all the same. Interesting piece. I'll post it to my Twitter. It was from davidduke.com. Let's move on here and see if we can't find some more interesting pieces. Moving on to, let's talk about Russia. Why is Russia building 5,000 new nuclear bomb shelters in Moscow by 2012? Probably because they know something's going on. What do you want to bet? And the Shanghai Civil Defense is also building huge shelters. There's huge bunkers going on and being built all over the world, and they've been being built like breakneck speed over the past 10 years. In America, there's all kinds of them, too. We just don't know exactly where they're located. Yeah, they're not for us white rabbits. Russia and many countries face a dilemma that, believe it or not, the United States doesn't face in the same way. And it's kind of funny. And at the same time, tragic. You see, Russia, you could hit St. Petersburg and Moscow and pretty much cripple Russia very easily. In multiple different ways. I mean, really, it'd be the end of it. Most countries, you can hit a handful of cities and it'd be the end of that country. And so when you prepare a military or defense or any type of nuke or fallout shelter, stuff like that, it's not based on probabilities or possibilities. When you prepare any type of defense plan, it's not based on possibilities or probabilities. That comes second. It's based on capabilities. What is our enemy's capabilities? And so that's why you have to have nuclear fallout shelters, because there are parties on this planet capable of nuking Moscow and St. Petersburg. That's why they're building them. Why are they building them so fast at this time? Well, that's another story for another day. We've went into that before. But there's all kinds of them. America has more personal bomb shelters than anywhere else, supposedly, because back in the 50s, there was a lot of them built in the average American homes, believe it or not. There's a lot of bomb shelters with 6-inch and 12 inches of concrete, top, bottom, walls, floor with little blast doors on them and everything else. You'd be surprised. But America, somewhere like America, is very, very difficult, because America, you have all these big target cities. And the funny thing is, you could take out Washington, you could take out New York, and you could take out Los Angeles. Most countries, you do something like that, it's over with for the countries. In America, well, there are some most of my listeners would think you just liberated the place. Yeah, you take out Washington, New York. If a tidal wave hit Washington and New York, or hit New York and, New York and Los Angeles and took them off the map, and then a mini meteor took out Washington, D.C., most people would think America's over with. Well, no, the United States would be over with. America would just be getting back to normal. That is the odd thing about America. America is so spread out. You got to basically hit all the red states and then get through all kinds of military, and basically someone in Washington would have to want you to do it on some level. The Jews, who knows? Who knows? Who knows what they're capable of? They're traitors. Their elites are, at least. But that's the funny thing about America. America doesn't have a couple cities you could hit. And, I mean, you do damage, don't get me wrong. You kill a lot of innocent people and all that type of stuff. But as far as the country, you would still be dealing with a serious enemy. You'd have to really, really shower America. There's only one place that could really do it, and that's Russia. And they got some kind of deal with the Russians now. What they try to do toward the end, I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. It's anything goes, but most of these countries do not have the luxury And the Russians have long, long ago built underground bunkers and bunkers in mountains. So does America. They have all kinds of stuff. So do the Germans. So does everyone. Now, whether or not we get in one is another thing going. You might want to have an... the odds of the average American city being hit would be pretty random, unless you're in one of the big ones. Unless you're in one of the big ones. But I don't know. That's kind of funny. Yeah, America... America is so spread out. I mean, we don't really have a manufacturing anymore, so you'd say, oh, you got to take out manufacturing. Well, we don't have anywhere near the manufacturing we once did. I mean, that's something you take out in China, you're not going to take out here. China has a handful of cities, and China has a huge dam holding back a bunch of water. You could flood out China. You could do all kinds of stuff. Russia, you could hit a couple big cities, but you're still not going to get to their elite, and they're still going to respond to you. In other words, they're going to send something back. But anyways, you do this type of thing based on the capabilities of your enemies, and then comes in the probabilities and the possibilities of this type of thing. And no one probably has more nuclear bunkers than America. It's just whether or not you get into one. America has all these Adam and Eve shelters. You can look them up. They're pretty interesting. Who knows how that stuff would work if a nuke actually went off somewhere. But anyways, moving right along, it's the fog of the end game setting in. Swedish skinheads elected to parliament. Interesting election. Swedish, let's see here, Jimmy Åkesson has already spent 5 years at the helm of the far-right Sweden Democrats. They're talking about him having a neo-Nazi past. He looks like a normal white rabbit there. But it's interesting. Things are moving into an interesting position into Europe prior to this war with the German speech on multiculturalism. It'd be a lot more interesting if someone would just pop the obvious and talk about genocide, but it takes a little courage to do that. So all you European rabbits, keep on a consistent message and push it to the top. It's the only reason they're talking about it now, trust me. Because they don't, you know, it takes too much courage to talk about anything that the established status quo, we will call it, will let you talk about. If you go against that at all, it takes something called courage, and most of our elites don't have that. No, they don't. Young Russians hail heroes, slam villains at Unity Day march. I talked about this huge Russian march, and I don't know what's going on inside Russia. Mandela moment awaits Russia in Yukos trial. Julian Rimmer. Well, I don't know about a Mandela moment for Kartakovsky. He may. They may let him walk. And then I know Jesus is coming the next morning to cut their heads off. Who knows what the Russians have planned on the eve of the endgame as the fog sets in, as they turn their attention internally. We have huge, huge volcano movements. 21 volcanoes across country ready to erupt. This is in Indonesia, across that. They have this ring of fire in Asia with all these volcanoes, underground volcanoes, not underground, underwater volcanoes, all kinds of stuff on these islands all over the place. Interesting stuff. This is Jakarta Globe, jakartaglobe.com. Indonesia warms, volcano could erupt for months. Oh my, months. And they've did all kinds of evacuations and stuff. That's the type of thing going on across the planet. Disasters and rumors of disasters, wars and rumors of wars. Let's see, Icelandic. Icelandic Review Online. U.S. Embassy in Iceland admits surveillance practice. The U.S. Embassy in Reykjavik has confirmed that surveillance detection unit, the same which caused controversy in other Nordic countries last weekend, has been in operation in Iceland with the purpose of monitoring the embassy's surrounding neighborhoods. Well, now what are you monitoring? There's too many white rabbits still there. Yeah, it's too white for them, so they got to monitor them. That's funny stuff. I could see if you had an embassy in Stockholm, Sweden, you're probably going to have some type of security monitoring all the crazy Muslims who might try to blow the place up. But in Iceland, that's kind of funny. I think they're just trying to spy to figure out a way to make it browner quicker or something. But it's an interesting piece. It raises a stink in Iceland. They don't like embassies spying on them. The purpose is simply to monitor suspicious practices near the embassy and its employees in cooperation with authorities responsible for security at the embassies. Sure. Let's see, Ahmadinejad in Lebanon, domestic and regional tensions. Oh, yeah, he was in Lebanon, and he announced that he was going to deal steel like cornmeal. So what is he going to do? This is funny. Chinese war planes refueled in Iran en route to Turkey. Chinese are doing all kinds of war games like everyone else. I've never seen so many war games. I've never seen so much build up over a stinking war. And that's how you know this is not just going to be another stinking war. Let's see, next piece. China insists it respects Iran's sanctions. Yeah, after going through all this stuff, refueling in Iran en route to Turkey, China insists it respects Iran's sanctions. This is an AFP piece. The previous one was Daily News and Economic Review. It's, hold on here, Hurriyet Daily News. Hurriyet. How WikiLeaks makes confrontation with Iran more likely. The WikiLeaks, this Julian Assange, I think that's how it's pronounced, A-S-S-A-N-G-E, had this big leak about how Iran was giving us problems in Iraq, and Iran was giving us problems this place. It's interesting stuff. I don't believe in coincidences, and I don't know anything about this guy. He's like, if he was half as dangerous as they think, they would arrested him like the Lord of War. You notice how the U.S. went out and arrested this Lord of War, Victor Bout. They went out and arrested him, but at the same time, you got Assange. Assange running around, Julian Assange running around talking, revealing all this top secret stuff. Well, they'd throw him in prison in a heartbeat. Oh, well, this is probably why they're not going to. Let's see, WikiLeaks, is Russia the next target? This is Time Magazine. Say what you will about Julian Assange, founder of whistleblowing website WikiLeaks, but his work has shown him to be pretty fearless. That's because someone wants him to be fearless. Let's see here. After the site published the biggest cache of secret files in U.S. history on October 22nd, dealing some of the ugly truths about war in Iraq, he continued to travel around Europe despite U.S. reprimands and warning. He even told the global media that new leaks should expose more secrets not only about the U.S. military but about other repressive regimes such as Russia and China. The signals coming from Moscow, however, suggest that the Russian reaction will not be as reserved as America's. So is WikiLeaks really ready to take on the world's most callous states? And it talks about that he's going to release stuff on Russia. The site stayed on. What's interesting is what the FSB has done the last time someone does something like this. When reached by Time, the FSB, which is the main successor to the Soviet KGB, declined to elaborate on the comment and what comment they're talking about. Let's see. So far, Russia has had no. Let me jump around here. So far, Russia has had no official response. But on Wednesday, an official at the Center for Information Security of the FSB, Russia's secret police, gave a warning to WikiLeaks that showed none of the tact of the U.S. reply to Iraq revelations. It's essential to remember that given the will and the relevant orders, WikiLeaks can be made inaccessible forever. The anonymous official told the independent Russian news website Life News, when reached by Time, the FSB, which is the main successor of the Soviet KGB, declined to elaborate on the comment or say whether it was the agency's official position. But history has shown that the FSB readily steps in to shut down internet tattlers. In June, a Russian analog to WikiLeaks called Lubyanskaya, Lubyanskaya, Pravda, published a series of documents that claimed to be top secret FSB files detailing the agency's operations in former Soviet Union and conflicts with other Russian security forces. The site stayed online for less than 3 weeks, during which time no Russian newspaper published the files and then put up a notice saying it was under construction. With the site down and the people who anonymously ran it unreachable, the leak was apparently stopped. The FSB could have easily found the people behind it and convinced them that it was not a good idea. It is also possible for the FSB to take down a site like WikiLeaks. They have the capacity for all this. So it should be interesting. I hope they do something. I can't wait to see what they do. It should be funny. Let's see. George Soros warns China of global currency war. This is interesting. This is the Telegraph out of London. George Soros has warned the global currency war pitting China against the rest of the world. In other words, China against pink rabbit banksters and elitesters, because China has a non-private central bank. China has issues its currency debt-free. I went into this. This is a huge deal between what's going on between the dollar and the Chinese yuan. Pink rabbit banksters, though, if I were the Chinese, I'd hunker down because they're not going to play fair. But this should be interesting. They're already giving warning shots to China. There's two sides to China, and I never know what end is up. But George is talking about the side he doesn't like, the ones running the banking. Their banking is Well, they issue a true currency, debt-free. They don't have any debt. And that's a no-no. Pink Rabbit banksters and elitists tend to attack anyone that tries that stunt. You got to issue that funny money. You got to issue that. You got to issue those notes. You got to issue debt in lieu of a true currency. And we went over this before, but this is coming to a head. Secret Walmart survey shows inflation already here. They're talking about inflation showing up in America from all this money they're printing. CNBC.com. Well, soon we will tell. I don't know. If the price of the grocery store start going up, there are those that believe before this war that they're going to collapse things in America. Now, I have no idea if that's true. It's a tough one. I'll get back to that in a minute. Israel analysts see a Turkey radicalizing become Iran number two. Apparently the Israelis don't have enough enemies, so they need to find another enemy. So they see Turkey radicalizing becoming the next Iran. Oh my. Let's see, as the U.S. arming Saudi Arabia for a proxy war against Iran, the U.S. has approved $60 billion, quote, billion, in defense agreement. This huge agreement to sell defense technology to Saudi Arabia. And what's going on is Saudi Arabia has petrodollars, but they're not allowed to spend those on anything except, like, weapons, so they buy a bunch of weapons. I don't see that as any big deal, but there is a big war going on over there, and they're going to have to buy out the Saudis somehow to get them involved in. And, of course, they're scared to death of Iran. We've went into this before. There's not really any huge news, except maybe the stuff about the speech that the Jews made. But let's keep on going around here. Let's see here. Let's keep cruising around the world here. Israel to Iran, time's up. Finance minister calls for naval blockade within 2 to 6 months. This was on October 5th. And they're going to do something to get this thing rolling. I just don't know what or when. This is the Jewish week. I'll go over a few of these because some of them are kind of funny. Terror expert, war with Iran more likely to happen. And this is the famous Michael Schur, a counterterrorism expert. He's the one that talked about Iraq being a scam originally. It's an interesting piece. This is Newsmax. Let's see here. U.S., Israel, and Iran have approached the endgame. This is October 21st. U.S. policy sanctions of engagement is hardening Iran's position. And coming in the engram. Is Iran leading Israel into a trap? And you're going to get tons of these pieces. This is BigThink.com. Is Israel posturing to attack Iran? This stuff doesn't end. This is just November 4th, and most likely they are. Now we come to election stuff. GOP senator considered neutering Iran's ability to wage war. And Lindsey Graham, apparently he got the email from Netanyahu to say go after him. I don't know. They must have pictures of Lindsey with his boyfriend or something. I don't know. You didn't know Lindsey Graham had a boyfriend? Neither do I, but it's a pretty good guess, I'm guessing. They got to have something on him because he always finds for Israel. Let's see here. Let's see what he said. Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, speaking in the Halifax International Security Forum in Canada, told reporters that there will come to a point where Iran's nuclear program will reach a state that conventional limited airstrike won't take them out. We're probably even past that point. Instead of a surgical strike on their nuclear infrastructure, I think we're at the point now where you have to really neuter the regime's ability to wage war against us and our allies, and that's a different military scenario. It's not a ground invasion, but certainly destroys the ability of the regime to strike back. He talks about just annihilating them. A Council of Foreign Relations paper published in March said two developments raised suspicions over whether Iran's program is just for peaceful purposes. They're talking their whole game, and they got all their men out on point. David Broder, war with Iran will save economy. Obama presidency. Yes, Obama, you'll save yourself by attacking Iran. Investors.com. And that was a big piece. David Broder said that on TV and freaked everyone out. But and that is the way they think, too, by the way. Investors.com, Iran's imperialism. With WikiLeaks exposing new U.S. secrets, the worst revelation is that the U.S. is vulnerable. He talks about all this, all the WikiLeaks stuff. WikiLeaks that WikiLeaks makes war more inevitable. Exodus to Jewish advisors from Obama White House likely not an omen of good things to come. Probably not, actually. But it's hard to say exactly why they left. Did he piss them off or screw them over? Or do they just not want to be involved with a failure? Or are they on the eve of war and they know it's going to be disaster? The speculation is, is what you get when you're on the fog of the endgame, which is even worse because you got all these different trend changes going on, all these different machinations, and then you got this big war. Cyber warfare against Iran, worm may be first strike, CBN.com. There was a cyber attack launched on Iran, and everyone thinks Israel did it, and it was most likely the start. A lot of people believe it was most likely the start of the war. It wasn't the start of the shooting war, but there's a soft war going on. And it's been going on some time, and it might have been the official start of some war. At war with Iran by early 2011, rightweb.irc/online.org. From a marketing point of view, don't introduce new products in August, explained the then White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card back in 2002. In answer and queries about why the administration of George W. Bush had not launched his campaign to rally public opinion behind invading Iraq earlier in the summer, and why it's only July, and less than this was back in July, this was done, this interesting piece. And while it's only July, and less than a month after the UN, the European Union, and the U.S. approved new economic sanctions against Iran, a familiar clutch of Iraq war hawks appear to be preparing the ground for a new major campaign to rally public opinion behind military action against the Islamic Republic. It's a piece back in July talking about military an option against Iran is inevitable. Same old, John Bolton, all the different characters. There's been some news stories come out of Iran about different, they've been doing all different types of defense drills and naval drills. And they have these new versions of Iran-made flying boats. They have these little flying boats they're going to use. Let's see what else they have. Navy equipped with new version of Iran-made flying boats. And this is, what news? This is a FARS news agency, FARS. The Iranian Defense Ministry in a ceremony on Tuesday delivered three squadrons of upgraded radar-evading flying boats named Bavar 2 to the Islamic Revolutionary Guards. They're pretty wild-looking little, they look like water boats. They look like, they don't look like anything for war. They look like suicide missions of some type. Let's see here. This is France 24. Let's see what France 24 is talking about. Iran launches four new homemade little mini submarines. Who knows what those are for? Nothing nice. Let's see the Telegraph. What's the Telegraph saying? Iran Navy produces armed copy of Blade Runner 51 speedboat. Yeah, all this Navy stuff Iran is preparing for. Preparing to die, I guess. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad visits London to send a menacing message. Yes, he said he's going to deal steel like cornmeal. Let's go over and see what the Green Goddess is doing. Maritime laser system shows higher lethality at longer ranges. That's good. Makes me feel safe. This is back in October. Tests of the U.S. Navy's Maritime Laser Demonstration, MLD, system conducted recently at the Potomac River Test Range confirms a laser weapon system readiness to proceed with an at-sea testing later this year. Hopefully they do it soon. It's very successful. Very successful laser system. Green Goddess is rolling out. Let's see here. Not just another warning, op-ed. IDF intelligence chief, grim predictions for the next regional war should be taken seriously. This is November 4th. This is recent. This is Ynet. And they're not kidding. No, they're not. Eventually, if you keep warning war, if you don't launch it, you're going to lose credibility, but everyone knows they're going to launch it. So they just keep on issuing this stuff. Let's see here. Israel to launch cluster war. They're talking about Israel's going to launch a war against several different opponents at once. A future round of Israel warfare would entail its forces attacking geographically separate areas and is intended to be of massive scale and lethality. The next round won't be focused on one theater, but will rather incorporate two or three. I'm guessing it will. They're talking about this war with Iran. Let's see, that was Press TV. A secret U.S. Air Force team to perfect plan for Iran strike. It's back from September. Project Checkmate. Let's see, Russian diplomat warns that North and South Korea are on the brink of war. This is recent. This is very, very recent. When is this? What is this? All this was back in September. Yeah, we got North and South Korea getting ready to go at it. That should be real interesting. Moscow has a new mayor, Sobyanin. I think that's right. Sergey, S-O-B-Y-A-N-I-N, Sobyanin. I think that's pretty close. Let's see here. What's going on in Moscow with the new mayor? Well, you got a big nationalist march. That's what's going on. Russian-Finnish relations more vigorous than ever. It's part of Russia's Northern European assault. They cruised across there and scooped up all kinds of stuff, got themselves a defense agreement with Denmark and all kinds of goodies. Russian spy chief betrayed Anna Chapman and other agents in defection deal. Yeah, that big spy operation in America was a defection of a Russian spy chief. They had a traitor in their midst. And so that's the reason for all those spies. They were sold out from above. Whether or not they got anything, well, they had to get something if they had a double agent in there. But they still don't have a new world order, so I don't know what they didn't get. Someone didn't get something. NATO to offer Russia access to U.S. satellite data. That's the Russians and the Americans working together, Russia and NATO working together. Let's see, Russian celebrities call on court to acquit Khodorkovsky. Well, we'll see. December 15th, we'll see what they do with them, what they're developing, and what they have planned. And they do have something planned, I'm guessing. There's not going to be any accidents. Russia develops anti-missile lasers. Do I think Khodorkovsky will? Let me back up for a second. Do I think he'll get out? I think anything goes as we enter the fog of the endgame. I don't know what crazy stuff they have planned. I'm ready for anything, though. Russia develops anti-missile lasers. Russia is developing a powerful military laser for destroying hypersonic targets in space. The system should be in service before 2015. I bet they already got it in service. It's an interesting piece. And as I wrap this up, as you can see, there's not really too much in the way of news other than everyone's preparing for this war. There's all kinds of cross currents and all kinds of confusing things going on. No one knows what the whole plan or scenario is. But one new event has been all these UFO sightings. I don't know whether it's any more UFO sightings than normal, but they sure are talking about them a lot on the local news, on everything else. And this is Louth Leader in the UK, Louth Leader. Talks about UFO sightings connected to the Large Hadron Collider experiment and all this crazy stuff. But this was back in 2008. It's a piece, but there's all these different, I've seen a list of all the different UFO sightings that track from year to year, and they're just reporting a lot of them. What's all it coming down to? Well, I'm going to do a question and answer. I'm going to do a question and answer, and I'm going to talk about the knockoff UFO invasion and some other things, and that'll be out the same time this is out, hopefully. And that'll be the next one up. But as we come into the end game, as the fog starts lifting, well, let me tell a story. I'll tell you a story about the white rabbits and the green goddess. And now a word from our sponsor. Horace, I've been wearing my Undercover Lover t-shirt nonstop all summer. Haven't even took it off to wash. Well, you may want to take it off to wash, and you may want to put it away for the winter or wear it underneath your new Undercover Lover hoodie, because we've got the deal for you. You don't need to be walking around Norway and Germany with just a t-shirt on all winter, unless, of course, you want to wear it over top of your snowmobile suit. Yes, you go get yourself an Undercover Lover hoodie, zip up or pull over in multiple different colors, all for a very, very low starting price of $39.95. And it's just in time for Santa Claus. And it's just in time to support our servers, right at Christmas time. So you hop on over there to whiterabbitradio.net, and you get yourself an Undercover Lover hoodie to go with your t-shirt. Yes. And now back to our regular programming. Our enemy is rather fascinating. They're always using various different symbols. And everyone uses all kinds of symbols. But our enemy always is usually misappropriating our stuff. They're always misappropriating symbols. But one symbol they use all the time, I found rather interesting. The alternative news and research sites are big on symbols. And one symbol they're big on is the owl. And they're right. Our enemy uses the owl quite a bit. They use the owl all over the time, all over the place. Different clubs they form will have an owl on it. They'll use an owl right, left, and center. And the owl is an interesting symbol. You know, I believe they use it for the Bohemian Grove out in San Francisco. And I was reading this from the alternative news and researchers that talk about this owl and how it was used and how far back it goes in European history and how it's been used and how they're misappropriating it. excuse me. And I started thinking about that our enemy does use a symbol quite a bit. They use various different symbols. The Star of Saturn, or what you think of as the Star of David, is another symbol that they use all the time. And then, of course, the Jew rabbits are always wearing that around their neck. But the owl is a fascinating creature. The owl is probably the greatest hunter in the natural world, because it can see in the dark, obviously. And that's why they use it, you know. That's why the alternative news and researchers say that they use the owl, because the owl sees best in the dark, and they're all about the darkness. You know, they're all about the dark side of the equation. But the owl is an amazing hunter. An owl can basically pinpoint its prey. And it has wings that are so quiet that not even a mouse can hear it. And an owl, of course, has amazing vision. It can turn its head almost 360. It can turn its head completely around. But that is, in reality, its flaw. Yeah, they say that our enemy uses the owl as its main symbol. Its main symbol, you know, the bird of prey. Our side generally uses the eagle on some end, but they use the owl. But the owl has one fatal flaw. It can't turn its eyes. It has to turn its head to see. I think that's an interesting point. And what is interesting about this is what's really happened over the past 15 years to our enemy. Our enemy was spending its whole entire time trying to destroy us, cooking up every single scheme, every single... probably even poisoning the very food we eat. Anything to kill white rabbits. That's what the red hippo is about. That's what the pink rabbits are about. Every social engineering program, every way you could arrange the media, anything you could cook up to kill a white rabbit is what they were about. They were busy sitting around looking at us. You know, we're kind of like on this big race up this mountain, and the top of the mountain is their new world order, or their version of it. And we're behind them there, and they're sitting out back behind the red hippo, and the red hippo is on a moped, and we're sitting out back behind the green goddess, and the green goddess is on her mountain bike, and they're cruising up on there, and they're throwing everything in the world at us to kill us. They're doing that. They're throwing everything in the world at us to kill us. Well, but they have one fatal flaw. Yeah, these idiots have to turn their heads to see. And they're no good. That is another flaw the owl has, is that it can only lock on one prey at one time. So it turns its head to see. It sees its little mouse or sees its white rabbit, and then this big pink owl jumps off and goes flying after him, but it can't stop once it starts. And so they're sitting here looking at us, turned around. They're going up the mountain, but they're basically, their heads are all turned, looking at us, throwing rotten eggs at us, throwing poison at us, basically throwing one big pot of white rabbit genocide, trying to kill us off. And we're just sitting here cruising along, and the green goddess on her mountain bike is taking most of the hits, and we're dying right, left, and center, and the whole deal is going on. And meanwhile, up in front of them, there's a huge roadblock. They're so busy looking at us, they didn't see this roadblock. So I find it interesting that they use the owl all the time, because an owl has to turn its head to see. And that's its flaw. Once it turns its head to see, it can't see anything else. So these idiots are looking at us, they're doing all this stuff to us, and all of a sudden they go, wha-bam! They hit this huge roadblock. And this roadblock is 5 miles high. Sit right in front of the red hippo's path to his new world order. And this roadblock is kind of a funny roadblock, because it's nothing but a bunch of brown, speckly rabbits hanging off this end and hanging off that end. And basically, it has one big word across it, Islam. Yes, Islam. Huge roadblock for the New World Order. And that's what we're into. They're going to have to go through this roadblock. And these idiots were so stupid, so arrogant, as to get off their moped to go around and try to rearrange the roadblock. Oh, we're just going to re-educate the roadblock. Forgetting the basics for a second, that you would have to own all the madrasas for 15 to 20 years to re-educate Islam, at a minimum, and own their media. And out of arrogance, they actually thought that they could pull this off. Why would they think that? Well, they thought they had a lot more time than they do have, apparently. But that's kind of funny. They were so busy looking at us, trying to kill us, they didn't realize they were going to have another enemy to go through before they get their new world order. And that's what we're entering into, the fog of the endgame. And we won't see anything until this red hippo goes plowing through this this wall. And he will do it. He will try to plow through this wall. And as he does plow through this wall, as he makes his first hole, as he opens up this Pandora's box of the endgame of World War III, our green goddess is going to bust right through behind him on her mountain bike, and we're behind her. And so if you're up there on her head, you're in the military somewhere, you might want to hold on, because this is going to be a wild ride. The funny thing is, no one knows what's on the other side of this wall. No one. There are going to be big surprises in store for everybody. And we're at a time on the calendar where white rabbits get big treats. We get big treats. Why? Because we're white. Yes, our race always delivers the goods mysteriously out of nowhere. But we won't be able to see anything until we get through this wall, until this idiot starts blowing up this wall. That's what he's got to do. There ain't no rearranging it. He's got to blow it up. He doesn't have time to rearrange it, apparently. He's got to blow it up, and blow it up. Apparently, the big number is 2012. I don't know what they're going to use this number for or what's going to go on afterwards. We have all different types of machinations with Russia, starting again with this Victor Boot or Victor Bout, who basically just owns cargo planes. And you're going to see all kinds of stuff in America over him. I don't know if they're going to topple the START treaty, because not only is this wall, Russia is helping to move certain barricades around in this wall, making sure they can't get through it. Russia's doing all sorts of different things. And so I expect to see all kinds of contradictions, all kinds of confusion as the fog of the endgame. But once we get through this wall, we're going to see a few things. We're going to be able to, hopefully it won't be too much. Hopefully there'll be the green goddess will throw us a sign once we come through this wall, and it'll be pretty obvious, or at least act one will be obvious, I'm hoping. But they're going to blow up this wall, and it's going to be pretty wild. And behind them, we will go right through it too. And it'll be a race to the top of the mountain. The green goddess, well, she should get an upgrade. Her mountain bike might very well get an upgrade. Once we get beyond the wall, she might get a Ducati. And it'll be a race, and we will win it, because the only ones that have a key to this Ducati is her. Yeah, the red hippo won't have a Ducati. But it's kind of funny. They were so busy looking at us, they didn't realize there was another obstacle in their path. Now, they could blow up this wall. The big problem with blowing up this wall has always been that you need Russia's permission. And that's kind of tough. You don't know what they're doing. You don't know what they're up to. You don't know what the Germans are doing, because they all work together. And it's kind of funny. And the big question is knowing our enemy. You know, we don't fully know our enemy. We know a big piece of them, little Jew rabbits, but we don't fully know everything about their enemy. I'm not comfortable in knowing my enemy. And in the previous piece that's going to be up the same time, you're going to see two pieces. One is a part of a Q&A where I go over war by deception and why I have big questions about this group. I think that's a must listen to if you're worried about knockoff alien invasions and stuff like that. I talk about all that stuff. In the next Q&A, I'm going to talk about even more crazier stuff. We're going to go back into Babylon. I'm going to talk about our enemy's origin. Some of the different stuff, I'm going to answer direct questions that you guys have asked. And then there'll be the White Rabbit Psychology and Ecology. And all these podcasts are done, and we're just putting them together, and we were kind of a little bit behind because I had personal matters to deal with, or family matters to deal with, coming into the holidays. But we're getting ready to go through this wall. It's not if and when. And once we go through it, I expect to see a couple things. I expect it to be what you see is what you get. The political game, as Russia and Germany moves internally, as we are banging on this consistent message, as we are banging this drum at this red hippo, which is what we've been doing very successfully. Pat yourself on the back and keep doing what you're doing. But as we do this, as this game moves internally, it'll become what you see is what you get on some level. Or it should be. It should be. And you know, obviously it would be really obvious if a German politician stands up and does a mantra. It'd be very obvious if a Russian does it. It'd be very obvious if some Republican or Democrat out of the blue. That's what I mean by what you see is what you get. It'll become, certain things will become obvious. But I'm interested in this war, obviously, and what they have planned and what they have to do and all the different machinations coming into it. I expect there to be a lot of confusion. The fog of the endgame. So stay tuned, and there should be a bunch of podcasts up there. By the time you see this, you're going to see at least a couple new podcasts, at least one other with it, and a couple more coming. So if you're downloading this and there's no other new podcasts beyond this, come back in the next week, 10 days, and there'll be a couple more for you. And we will continue this process. But by all means, keep doing what you're doing. Stay on a consistent message. Find another rabbit that's good at talking or good at spreading things online, and keep doing what you are doing. We are now at the end of another episode of Horace the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening. We are now at the end of another episode of Horace the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.